In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. In the last few months, some of the shows focused in on the efficacy of PCR tests and the manipulation of COVID-19 death count numbers. These are critical to understand because positive results from a PCR test are being called infections. This is wrongly termed in light of the 90% inaccuracy of the PCR test. Yet elected and appointed leadership continue to use this inaccurate data to base their decisions to shut down schools, businesses, and entire economies. The fear-based media programming is no doubt effective, and it's normal to trust leadership during a pandemic, but it's abnormal to be paralyzed with uncertainty and fear when you eventually have additional information showing how the data is being manipulated. Before we get into other topics, I want to go over an important article that past guest Pauline Cantwell sent out to me titled "German Neurologist on Face Masks: Oxygen Deprivation Causes Permanent Neurological Damage." Dr. Marguerite Gries-Bresson, MD, PhD, is a consultant neurologist and neurophysiologist with a PhD in pharmacology, with special interest in neurotoxicology, environmental medicine, neuroregeneration, and neuroplasticity. This is what she had to say about face masks and their effects on our brains. Quote, "The re-inhalation of our exhaled air will without a doubt create oxygen deficiency and a flooding of carbon dioxide. We know that the human brain is very sensitive to oxygen deprivation. There are nerve cells, for example, in the hippocampus that can't be longer than 3 minutes without oxygen. They cannot survive. The acute warning symptoms are headaches, drowsiness, dizziness, issues in concentration, slowing down of reaction time, reactions of the cognitive system. However, when you have chronic oxygen deprivation, all of those symptoms disappear because you get used to it. But your efficiency will remain impaired and the undersupply of oxygen in your brain continues to progress. We know that neurodegenerative diseases take years to decades to develop. If today you forget your phone number, the breakdown in your brain would have already started 20 or 30 years ago. While you're thinking that you've gotten used to wearing your mask and rebreathing your own exhaled air, the degenerative processes in your brain are getting amplified as your oxygen deprivation continues. The second problem is that the nerve cells in your brain are unable to divide themselves normally. So in case our governments will generously allow us to get rid of the face masks and go back to breathing oxygen freely again in a few months, the lost nerve cells will no longer be regenerated. What is gone is gone. I do not wear a mask. I need my brain to think. I want to have a clear head when I deal with my patients and not to be in a carbon dioxide-induced anesthesia. There is no unfounded medical exemption from face masks, because oxygen deprivation is dangerous for every single brain. It must be the free decision of every human being whether they want to wear a mask that is absolutely ineffective to protect themselves from a virus. For children and adolescents, masks are an absolute no-no. Children and adolescents have an extremely active and adaptive immune system, and they need a constant interaction with the microbiome of the earth. Their brain is also incredibly active, as it has so much to learn. The child's brain, or the youth's brain, is thirsting for oxygen. The more metabolically active the organ is, the more oxygen it requires. In children and adolescents, every organ is metabolically active. To deprive a child or an adolescent's brain from oxygen, or to restrict it in any way, is not only dangerous to their health, it is absolutely criminal. Oxygen deficiency inhibits the development of the brain, and the damage that has taken place as a result cannot be reversed. And the word cannot is in all caps. The child needs the brain to learn, and the brain needs oxygen to function. We don't need a clinical study for that. This is simple, indisputable physiology. Consciously and purposely induced oxygen deficiency is an absolutely deliberate health hazard and an absolute medical contraindication. An absolute medical contraindication in medicine means that this drug, this therapy, this method, or measure should not be used, and it is not allowed to be used. To coerce an entire population to use an absolute medical contraindication by force, there must be definite and serious reasons for this, and the reasons must be presented to competent, interdisciplinary, and independent bodies to be verified and authorized. Well, that doesn't that take you back to what attorney Helm was mentioning, the blocking of the discovery process for the Michigan governor's administration to release what information they have to justify the extended lockdown in Michigan, and also attorney Tom Rentz in Ohio, who is also trying to get discovery to find out what the governor in Ohio knew, what their data is, and when they knew it. The point is that this information is being blocked. The article continues, when in 10 years dementia is going to increase exponentially and the younger generations couldn't reach their God-given potential, it won't help to say, quote, we didn't need the masks. How can a veterinarian, a software distributor, a businessman, an electric car manufacturer, and a physicist decide on matters regarding the health of the entire population? Please, dear colleagues, we all have to wake up. I know how damaging oxygen deprivation is for the brain. Cardiologists know how damaging it is for the heart. Pulmonologists know how damaging it is for the lungs. Oxygen deprivation damages every single organ. Where are our health departments, our health insurance, our medical associations? It would have been their duty to be vehemently against the lockdown and to stop it, and to stop it from the very beginning. Why do medical boards issue punishments to doctors who give people exemptions? Does the person or the doctor seriously have to prove that oxygen deprivation harms people? What kind of medicine are our doctors and medical associations representing? Who is responsible for this crime? The ones who want to enforce it, the ones who let it happen and play along, or the ones who don't prevent it? It's not about masks. It's not about viruses. It's certainly not about your health. It is about much, much more, and I'm not participating, and I'm not afraid. You can notice they're already taking our air to breathe. The imperative of the hour is personal responsibility. We are responsible for what we think, not the media. We are responsible for what we do, not our superiors. We are responsible for our health, not the World Health Organization. And we are responsible for what happens in our country, not the government. Those are the words from a well-known German neurologist and neurophysiologist, Dr. Marguerite Gries-Brisson. At this point, it's clear to most people who are not ignoring the breaches of fundamental civil liberties that not only have extended emergency lockdown declarations and second wave fear-mongering fed into the presidential campaign, but there is also a worldwide agenda with the United States in the crosshairs. It's argued that this administration is in the crosshairs because during a speech at the World Economic Forum, President Donald Trump proclaimed the United States will not become a socialist country. And whether President Trump meant their form of socialism, most people don't trust international financial agencies from Switzerland and United Nations, their NGOs, to implement an economic makeover. Pope Francis, the United Nations, the EU stand against Trump. Holly Weird is against Trump. The corporate-owned media have run out of ideas and now only campaign against Trump using fear. Why would it be okay to allow international agencies to impose their form of economics onto the United States? Is it not clear that the white knighting of a more compassionate, benevolent economic system is a Trojan horse for a technocratic enslavement aligned with the World Bank, the World Economic Forum, the United Nations Agenda 2030, and other sinister organizations? Both sides are deep into dark money, the Koch brothers on one side, and to what degree is the Biden-Harris administration more bought out by foreign interests? With either administration, the populace faces the specter of Agenda 21, 2030, fifth-generation wireless radiation surveillance, weaponry, and health effects, big tech and social media giant censorship that artificially favors content from, quote, authorities, the human trafficking epidemic, and the related ritual adrenochrome consumption, full-spectrum surveillance, and climate engineering. Real-time climate engineering, for example, is among the many ecological challenges faced on planet Earth. Real-time aerosol operations and the manipulation of the jet stream rank as the most horrendous operations known to date, operations so deceptive and diabolical. Many protect themselves from learning more and remain in disbelief while they're aggressively deployed night and day in plain sight. However, sinister operations at this magnitude couldn't happen without a network of compliant people behind the scenes from so-called environmental groups, Pentagon generals, propaganda media, NASA scientists, university professors, and TV meteorologists under gag orders. To this day, hack articles continue to be published, essentially explaining the uncertainty and dangers of climate engineering, but scientists might need to do it. There was a recent article in the New York Times titled, "As Climate Disasters Pile Up, a Radical Proposal Gains Traction." The idea of modifying Earth's atmosphere to cool the planet, once seen as too risky to seriously consider, is attracting new money and attention. This was written by Christopher Flavelle in the New York Times. And in this article, Professor Doug McMartin is featured. If you recall, he was in the debate with Dane Wigington live on the air on WBAI in March of 2018. And the article reads, "We're facing an existential threat, and we need to look at all the options," said Michael Girard, director of the Sabine Center for Climate Change Law at the Columbia Law School and editor of a book on technology and its legal implications. He's quoted here, "I liken geoengineering to chemotherapy for the planet. If all else is failing, you try it." On Wednesday of last week, a nonprofit organization called Silver Lining announced $3 million in research grants to Cornell University, the University of Washington, Rutgers University, the National Center for Atmospheric Research, and others. The work will focus on practical questions such as how high in the atmosphere to inject sunlight-reflecting aerosols, how to shoot the right-sized particles into clouds to make them brighter, and the effect on the world's food supply. One way to cool the Earth is by injecting aerosols into the upper layer of the atmosphere, where those particles reflect sunlight away from the Earth. That process works, according to Douglas McMartin, a researcher in mechanical and aerospace engineering at Cornell University, whose team received funding. Quote, this is Doug McMartin here, "We know that with 100% certainty that we can cool the planet," Dr. McMartin said in an interview. "What's still unclear," he added, "is what happens next." Well, I wonder how he knows with 100% certainty. But this is the same in hundreds of articles in the last few years. We don't want to deploy these operations, but if necessary, we will, and deal with the consequences. But they're doing it in real time. That's how they know with 100% certainty. In April of 2018, I moderated a debate in the middle of the afternoon on WBAI with Dane Wigington and Professor McMartin. Let's hear part of that debate.
The only way that it is realistic to actually have a global effect on the climate is to put material at least 60,000 feet and really more like 70,000 feet. And the reason for that is that the air up at that altitude is sufficiently stratified that the material stays there for about a year. If you were to put material at 35, 40, 45,000 feet where the airplanes can actually get to, That material only stays in the atmosphere for a week or two, and the amount of material that you would have to put to have a measurable effect on the climate is just truly, truly enormous and beyond the scale that anyone could conceivably do. So it is certainly possible for somebody to fly an airplane to 45,000 feet and dump some material there, but it's not going to have a measurable effect on the global climate.
Okay, let's Dane, do you want to respond?
Wait a minute. Let's back into this. First, let's say not going to have a measurable effect on the global climate. You're saying putting tens of millions of tons, which is the stated goal of geoengineer David Keith, who I know you know and work with, his stated goal on the record, Doug, your listeners can look this up, Jeff, is to put 20 million tons of aluminum nanoparticulates into the atmosphere. You're saying that that wouldn't affect the global climate? We have NOAA stating that the aircraft trails, whatever those are radically affecting the global climate. Dane, how can you possibly say it wouldn't affect the climate? Do you want to clarify that question first?
Dane, did you want to repeat back the previous sentence that I made about altitude?
No. You said that if they were putting materials into the climate at 40,000 feet, it would not affect the climate. How can you possibly make that statement? When you alter convection, Doug, I'm losing 60, 70, 80% of my solar PV uptake because of direct sunlight loss. When you cover the horizon and aircraft emissions are covering the entire horizon, how can you possibly say, when NOAA admits on the record, that that has a radical effect on the climate? Your only argument, Doug, is that you're talking about your definition of 70.
That has been made.
Hey, wait a minute. You're interrupting me, and you're not letting me finish, Doug.
Hold on. Let Dane finish. Go ahead, Dane.
Your argument is what you describe as Douglas McMartin's personal definition of climate engineering occurring at 70,000 feet, and you know that that's not occurring. That's not what we're talking about here, Doug. That's not what we're talking about. Do you know or deny that David Keith has proposed putting tens of millions of tons of aluminum nanoparticulates, the most recognized geoengineer in the world, into the atmosphere? Will you acknowledge that?
I think that is a highly misleading statement on at least three counts.
Do you deny that he said
that? I think you know it's a misleading statement. First of all, I'm asking, do
you know he said that?
I would say that is a highly misleading statement, and I think it would be the correct statement is David Keith wrote a paper that essentially asked the question of, hey, everybody normally talks about putting sulfate. Maybe you could do this with aluminum. And he wrote the paper, and I think the conclusion from that paper was, yeah, you could do it, but it probably wouldn't be a good idea. That's not the same as proposing something. It's basically asking a question and answering it. The amount of material that he was talking about, once again, he was talking about putting that sufficiently high into the atmosphere that you're up in the region where you have a residence time of a year, not in a region where you have a residence time of a week.
So why does MIT then, Doug, state from David Keith that geoengineering would be incredibly cheap and easy? Quote from MIT. You're saying it's impossible. Dr. Keith at MIT saying it would be incredibly cheap and easy. How do you refute that?
The difference between the English tense would be and the English word is.
You know, semantics aren't going to change this argument. That's exactly what was stated.
Dane, that's not semantics.
Future tense.
Tense actually
not
matters.
Future tense.
There's a difference between something being possible and something being done. I think you should understand that. And don't try to insult people.
So your interpretation
with
of
the distinction
MIT
between saying something would be easy is proof that it is currently easy today. Those are not the same thing.
So wood means in their term, what, 100 years from now or 200 years from now? Because none of their data states that. It says right now. And Doug, I was at the conference where David Keith proposed 10 million tons of aluminum nanoparticulates in the atmosphere. So it's on film. I would ask your listeners to look at that. You know, from every angle, when the stratosphere definition is redefined by you, when the NOAA study is redefined by you, not citing any particular source, and now you redefine the MIT study, which directly from David Keith at MIT stating it would be cheap and easy, not off in the future, now. So you're adding your own interpretation onto everything and asking us to accept that as fact. I'm sorry, I'm not going to throw all these facts out the window because you say differently.
Actually, I think you're just not listening to what I'm saying.
I am listening to what you're saying.
That it would not fundamentally be difficult to design an airplane that could do that. That's not the same statement as an aircraft currently exists to do that. Do you agree with that?
No, I don't agree with that. The studies don't
agree
say
with
anything
the statement that,
that
something
anything of that type
is different.
You know, you're making
existing?
This up as you go, my friend. The studies don't say anything like that. Nothing like that.
Professor McMartin, this is a radio station. You can't use profanity. Okay, so please
just,
don't do that again.
Dane is refusing to answer a simple question. Dane, do you believe that there is a distinction between saying something is possible and something is being done? Yes or no?
It's an irrelevant question, Doug.
It's not an
irrelevant
question because
be.
You're claiming that I'm saying those are... that is the part of the basis of your argument.
Can we jump...
You said
can
I'm
we get
redefining
past
what MIT said, and I'm saying no, you're the one redefining it. Answer the question, yes or no?
Doug, the study doesn't say what you said, period.
It says it would be easy. I agree.
It doesn't say someday we could design aircraft. It says that this is the capability now. So if you want to change the rules, if you can find me a citation that says it's capable now,
please provide it.
I just did provide it. Listeners can look it up.
No, they can. Well, they can try. They're not going to find anything.
They can find an MIT study with Dr. David Key saying it would be cheap and easy, period.
Correct.
Not someday in the future, not when we invent some new technology. Cheap and easy now.
Question. Does the word would be the same as
I'm
the
not
word
gonna play
is.
Your game of semantics. I'm asking people to look at the study, okay? I'm not going to play semantics with you. The study doesn't say what
you
said,
are playing
period.
Semantics.
Okay. Let's get past the semantic part of it because we have a half hour left and I think we can cover some good ground here. Professor McMartin, you see what's going on, obviously, that Dane's available data that he has presented, and he represents a large group of people with similar concerns on this issue. What they're seeing seems to look exactly like the geoengineering operations being proposed. Now, you're saying it's 13 miles up into the stratosphere. That would be the appropriate area to do this level of geoengineering to cool the planet if necessary. And we don't have the technology to do that yet. But what do you suspect people are seeing that looks almost exactly like some of the geoengineering operations being proposed?
First of all, if somebody actually were putting stuff up into the stratosphere, you actually probably wouldn't see anything at all. Certainly the normal thing that is proposed is sulfur dioxide, which is just a gas, so you'd never see it. The trails that you see behind airplanes, the contrails, that is water that is condensed. So one of the byproducts of combustion is water vapor, and that's
the
same process as forming clouds.
How do you know that that is condensation? How can you say as an academician definitively that you know that that is condensation that we see all over the globe? As an academician, how can you possibly say that?
So strictly speaking, I'm trusting the fact that tens of thousands of atmospheric scientists, basically every atmospheric scientist on the planet, says exactly the same thing. Plus, just basic, I do know that clouds are made of water vapor, and I do know that an airplane, when it flies, produces water vapor as well as lots of cloud condensation nuclei. And so it does seem like the simpler hypothesis to assume that tens of thousands of people aren't lying to me, and that, in fact, if you add water vapor in a concentrated form into the atmosphere, then at least some of the time it will condense into clouds.
Okay, can I have my turn, Doug? I don't want you to use profanity against me again. I just want to have my turn
Dane. You've just been really frustrating me because you don't listen to what I say.
Doug, take a look in the mirror, my friend. Cloud condensation nuclei, that's a particle, is it not? Does that not mean a particle? Cloud condensation nuclei
is
a particle, correct?
Yes.
So you're admitting there is a particle coming out of the aircraft.
Oh, absolutely.
In regard to why scientists aren't lining up to sound the alarm, Doug, do you think that the illegal federal gag order on all National Weather Service and all NOAA employees might be a factor? They have no First Amendment rights to begin with, and now there's an illegal federal gag order on them. Doug, why would we think they would be lining up to sound the alarm on something that they know they would face ferocious legal ramifications, if not far worse? Are you aware of the illegal federal gag order, Doug?
Actually, I'm not, but because I certainly talk to scientists from time to time. But you're also assuming that every atmospheric scientist on every single country in the entire planet is somehow in on this and has been for decades.
Well, Doug, if this is so definitive, let me ask this. When our legal team surveyed 1,500 climate scientists, including the 77 who denied or said chemtrails weren't real and didn't use, as Ken Caldera, whom I know you know, intentionally didn't use the geoengineering term or any of the science terms related to it. But when we did, and we asked those 77 scientists and 1,430 more, none, not one, was willing to deny that climate engineering had already been deployed. Not one. Why do you think that is, Doug?
Can you name a single one who said that it was being deployed?
Dang.
That's not the point.
Actually, it is.
If it's not, and they're so sure it's not, Doug, why would they have any trouble denying it? Why would they have any trouble denying it? That's the point. If it's not happening and you're so sure it's not happening, why were none willing to deny it? Not one of 1,500. That's the point.
We all get hundreds of emails a day. I suspect that if you go back, you'll discover that most people just deleted your email and threw it in the trash as being not respondable to. But I think you actually did post the responses of some people on your website.
Oh, I heard from many. Heard from Alan Robach, even. I know you know him. He was angry, but he wouldn't deny it. Wouldn't deny it. I know you know Alan Robach. He didn't throw it in the trash. He's one that I heard back from. We heard back from Marcia McNutt, the head of the National Academy of Sciences, within 3 hours, heard back from Ms. McNutt.
If you can name a single climate scientist who says this is going on, then I would certainly like to know the name of that person. I would be very interested in talking to
them. So unless or until those who know they would face grave ramifications from this if they were to admit to it, unless they do, therefore, it can't be true. That's not a strong argument, Doug. We have the same elements listed in climate engineering patents, and if you're telling me that condensation can block 90% of my solar PV uptake, that's simply a lie. That's a lie. Condensation can't block 90% of solar power uptake. It can't. So
actually, Dane, if 90% of the sunlight was blocked from the planet, we'd all be dead.
Doug, I'm not talking about 24/7 around the clock, and we do have global dimming that's 20 to 30%, depending on the study. Do we not? Do we not have global dimming, Doug?
If we had 20% global dimming, we'd all be dead.
Well, official studies say so. I encourage listeners to watch BBC Dimming the Sun. Watch the documentary Dimming the Sun. It's online, or they can rent and buy a copy. So there are plenty of academicians who dispute that, Doug, and I can tell you firsthand my lack of solar uptake, and we have commercial solar power plants that are producing, in some cases, half what their design said they should have produced. Half, Doug. How many people are seeing blue skies now? Not very often at all. Well, the listeners can all jump in on that and decide how much they agree with you on that one. So, you know, hear no evil, see no evil. But, Doug,
so, like
this,
I said before,
where
that
this
has nothing
matter
to do
coming
with
from? I'm asking you that.
Hold on a second. Dane, give Doug a chance to respond. Go ahead, Doug.
So there's two separate questions here that are completely unrelated. One is the question of, is somebody deliberately cooling the planet? We've already gone through that one, and you simply don't want to listen to any of the things that I said. The second one is more or less independent, is, do we believe that contrails are actually contrails?
Is somebody deliberately cooling the planet? Just because it doesn't work, Doug, we've been through the question, you're right. Just because it's not working overall doesn't mean it isn't going on. So again, we're back to a game of semantics, are we not?
So you're asserting that there's this enormous, vast conspiracy of people, like tens and tens of thousands of people in every country of the planet who's been secretly plotting to do something even though they know it doesn't do anything whatsoever.
How
and the alternative water vapor condenses.
Wait, can you just say that again? Sometimes you pause and it seems like you're wanting a response, but then you start talking,
right.
So it's a little confusing. Finish that sentence, please.
Yeah, so it strikes me there's two hypotheses, right? One is that water vapor condenses, and the other hypothesis is that there's a vast conspiracy of tens of thousands of atmospheric scientists and plane mechanics and so forth who are all in on this conspiracy of doing something even though they know perfectly well it doesn't actually do anything useful.
How in the world would they know that when everybody's compartmentalized? Do you think that the pilot in Vietnam who was spraying his comrade on the ground with Agent Orange was told, hey, this is going to kill your buddy, by the way? No, of course not. Do you think that the soldiers out with goggles on being told to watch the nuclear bomb go off were told, hey, you're going to get cancer and die? Doug, do you think that the 450,000 Americans that have now died based on peer-reviewed study, is a direct result of the nuclear bombs that were detonated in Nevada without the public's knowledge or consent. 450,000 Americans, do you think that they were told that there's a problem? Or those that detonated those bombs were told, by the way, you're going to kill 450,000 of your comrades? No, they weren't told. How about depleted uranium, Doug, and the 200,000 Gulf War soldiers exposed to that? I could go on and on
okay,
and on.
Okay, Dane, let Doug respond to that. Go ahead. What about that logic?
Dane, I agree that there's an awful lot of horrible things that go on in this world.
He's specifically talking about the logic, though.
But the...
I cited the gag order. I mean, we have a legal... Why would they gag the weathermen, Doug? Why would our government gag National Weather Service and NOAA?
So I agree with you that there's a lot of terrible things that go on in the world and have gone on in the world, but at least with those things you can say somebody was testing a nuclear bomb because they wanted to know if the nuclear bomb worked. You're asserting that people have been doing something that they know patently well doesn't work because the residence time in the atmosphere for those aerosols isn't high enough to have a meaningful effect.
Doug, you're assuming that I assume that there is some benevolence in these programs. I'm not assuming that. I've never assumed that.
I think there's generally an intention. I'm just saying there's two hypotheses, right? So your hypothesis is there's tens of thousands of people, and they're all doing something that they know doesn't work. And the alternate
hypothesis is, how would they know that?
Because I think it's pretty
easy.
There's lots of people who would know what the residence time in the troposphere is.
I tried to cite some examples for you. Do you think that, again, that soldiers that are actually inflicting damage on their own countrymen are told that that's what's going to happen? Of course they're not told. I never asserted what you just said I asserted. Never did. Doug, can you answer me this?
Okay, so only the atmospheric scientists.
Can I finish my statement? Can you answer me this? What possible reason can you give me for a federal gag order on all National Weather Service and all NOAA employees?
So first of all, I'm not aware of the gag order but I do know that there have been concerns in the past from the administration who does not want to believe in climate change and thinks that preventing scientists from talking about climate change will be a good way to prevent regulations on fossil fuels. Which, you know, ultimately we're all interested in the same thing, right? We all want a nice, healthy, livable climate for our children.
Doug, I want to refute your answer. This didn't happen just during this administration. It happened during the Obama administration, okay? So that answer doesn't hold water either.
Yeah. So send me a link that describes the gag order, because I'm not familiar with it.
Well, I would encourage you and all the listeners to look it up. So I've had a NOAA scientist state to my face off the record, we all know what's happening. We have no First Amendment protection. Now we have a gag order. And, Doug, for you to claim that the level of solar obscuration that's occurring, whatever the agenda you want to put it under, is not affecting the weather, is truly unsupportable by the data. Truly unsupportable. When you can block, and I'm not saying 24/7, I didn't say that, but on occasion, I'm losing 60, 70, 80, 90% of my solar power uptake, whole horizons covered. For you to infer that that's not going to affect the weather is really not a rational conclusion.
So, interestingly enough, by the way, for what it's worth, I just Googled gag order NOAA and got a website that debunked it. So
you might want
to be careful suggesting
everything.
That people Google
that certainly
things.
Fixes everything, Doug. You found a website to debunk something, and that makes it not true. The original document was sent to us by the peer people. Our attorneys have talked to the peer people, public employees for environmental responsibility. So the fact that you can find something online to say it isn't so, Doug, hardly backs up your argument, does it?
Well, I think the readers can go read both sets of information and make their own judgments
and
about that.
And let's hope they
and
do.
And I hope they do.
So we would agree that the climate is in catastrophic shape. We have the top U.S. military brass stating on the record, greatest national security threat of all.
Yep.
And you believe that they're going to ask our permission before they would deploy anything like this?
Well, that's a different question. The question that I can state with certainty is that nobody has done it.
And again, how can
whether they would ask our permission before doing it is a different question. That's speculation.
As an academician, again, I challenge that premise. How can you possibly say that you know that this has never been deployed? That's an absurd statement from any academician on any subject. How can you possibly say that?
For all of the reasons that I gave you before, we've been through this, Dane. You don't
seem to want to listen to any of my answers.
My
word for it. And because we're going on your definition, you know nothing's been deployed at 70,000 feet, and this is, you're sort
of... No, nothing has been... My definition is deliberately cooling the planet. That's my definition.
Okay, so because
if you
want to
use a different definition,
it's not deployed.
Feel free.
But that's to reframe that. So because it's not working, therefore it can't be deployed. That's your argument, correct?
Well, it is true that somebody could be, well, I mean, in principle, every airplane, as you pointed out, every airplane puts a small amount of aerosol out there that forms cloud condensation nuclei. That is a true statement. That is not making a measurable difference to the temperature of the planet.
NOAA says otherwise. I could cite the NOAA article for you. They said the aircraft formed clouds are absolutely affecting the climate quite radically.
They're actually warming the planet, and the total radiative forcing from all of the airplanes over the entire planet is of order 1% of the radiative forcing from the CO2 that we have in the atmosphere.
So then, Doug, why, when the planes were grounded after 9/11, did we have such a profound increase in daytime temperatures within 2 days? If it's such a small percentage, why
that was
have...
actually debunked as being not statistically significant.
Oh, really? Okay, now let's
go
have listeners. And you know, Doug, the fact that the government denies things, does that really mean anything to anybody at this point? And that's your premise because the government says it isn't so?
I think the government is capable of lots of things, Dane, but I don't think the government is capable of changing the laws of physics.
That was part of a debate with Professor Doug McMartin and Dane Wigington with Geoengineering Watch. It's important to remember that the very description of climate engineering detailed in the New York Times article is actually being done in real time. Unfortunately, not unlike the pandemic, the people involved don't care what you think and know that they can get away with lying to your face because they know you won't look up and collect evidence. So here's the Green New Deal, because all of this carbon is your fault. Please consider all of this in terms of the mountain of evidence exposing real-time weather control operations and geoengineering as explained in depth by many guests on this show. The investigations into real-time weather control deployment has been shown to modify temperature, manipulate and move the atmospheric river and the jet stream, and force precipitation and drought events. This implies direct collusion with the United Nations Agenda 21 programs, the long-term agenda to stack and pack people into cities, get them out of their cars, and walking to work. All of this is pushed along with falsified reports of pending environmental catastrophe. Remember, the same people here behind the pandemic are behind the green mask, and that's the title of Rosa Corey's book. She has been a guest on this show. Let's hear part of an interview that we had done that connects right into what we're talking about here. The word sustainability is used throughout the USMCA. This word is the official buzzword, and you've taken note of this in much of your writings throughout the past decade. And it's been critiqued as artificial scarcity under the guise of conservation. It is a behavior modification scheme through social engineering. It's worldwide rationing. Less food, less water, less energy, less mobility, less choice, less freedom. Rosa, the pandemic outbreak has brought a sampling of this agenda into the lives of many people on this planet. What are your thoughts on the connection to UN Agenda 21 and this pandemic?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you definitely see it. It's certainly there. And, of course, artificial scarcity, austerity, consolidation of wealth. We're going to be seeing that with the stock market and possibly a real estate crash and currency manipulations. And so the winners of this are, of course, the globalist controllers. And for Agenda 21, leveling the economies of the world is a goal so that they can be merged and managed centrally. Because this is what harmonization is. You can't you can't centrally control through computerized means if you can't, if everything doesn't match up. That's what that is. So if you're talking about lockdown and terror and crippling the economy and destroying mental health and scarcity and austerity, and by the way, destroying the Yellow Vest movement and the Hong Kong freedom movements, this is a perfect way to do it. It's an inventory and control plan. That's what Agenda 21 is. That's also what a coronavirus vaccination plan, whatever, is an inventory and control plan. You want to inventory everyone who's got it or who could have it or who might have an antibody, and then you want to be able to control. And this is what we've seen, of course, all across the world. This is the ultimate in total information, your DNA. So full medical information for experimentation is part of this plan. Here's the thing. Any global crisis, because it's global, it requires a global response, and that is going to justify global governance. And that's what we're looking at here with Agenda 21, global governance. That is the goal.
I was thinking about the social engineering aspect of this, because right now we can't walk into a grocery store without a mask or waiting in line. So we certainly have a less freedom element. And you mentioned vaccines. Well, one of the core principles of Agenda 2030 in their documents is to, quote, extend the benefits of vaccines to everyone, everywhere. The WHO is primarily funded by the Gates Foundation. Both organizations are talking about vaccines for everyone. And again, this is a specific alignment with Agenda 2030's core principle. What are your thoughts on this one specifically?
Immunization, Agenda 2030. This is how they name it. It's Immunization Agenda 2030, a global strategy to leave no one behind. Leaving no one behind. So, you know, not just vaccinate everyone, but, you know, the whole thing with this is that it's an invisible enemy, right? So everyone is your enemy. Everyone is your potential enemy. Everyone you see, including your family members, is not to be trusted. It's a danger to you. Terror is a vital part of this plan, because unless you're really vitally scared, you're not going to be agreeing to many of the elements of these plans. And Agenda 2030 is a milestone in the Agenda 21 plan, because Agenda 21 is the agenda for the 21st century, and Agenda 2030 is a 30-year-in milestone. So the concept is that incremental change can be accepted. You know, we're not talking about revolution in a sense of a violent revolution. We're talking about incremental change.
Rosa Corey, author of Behind the Green Mask. That incremental change Rosa is talking about has crept into our everyday lives under the pretense of security and convenience. Douglas Rushkoff, author of Team Human, has gone into detail about this. The digital technology that was designed to meaningfully connect people has created a landscape of passive users who have unwittingly become the product. A recent survey found that 42% of the time Americans are awake, their eyes are fixated on a television, smartphone, computer, tablet, or other device. The stage is set, mask up, phone addicted. Is it game over? James Corbett released another great narrative questioning the reset. What is it? He says it's the same thing that's been creeping up for decades, but it's now here. It's not a reset, but a transformation. Let's have a listen to part of this presentation.
In case you missed it, this is about changing humanity at the core of what it means to be human. So as you can imagine, the knock-on effects from this are not just manifold, it's everything. Everything about who we are, our society, the way it's structured, the way we interact with other people in every respect is being altered forever on the basis of this great reset that is being actively and openly conspired on by some of the richest and most influential people on the planet. But don't worry, they will have no shortage of feel-good buzzword catchphrases about environmental responsibility and sustainability and equality and inclusion and all of the other catchphrases that we've been taught, to clap like trained seals when we hear them without thinking for one moment what they are actually talking about here. Oh yeah, international travel, you'll probably have to have brain scans to determine if you're a security threat risk, but whatever. Anyway, moving right along. It'll be so great, because you'll be able to post things to social media via your thoughts. But then again, what if you have a censored thought that the social media won't allow you to post? Maybe you'll get a visit from the thought police. Literally talking about things that have always been portrayed as sci-fi dystopian madness is being actively promoted out in the open now. No attempt to hide this. This is not some sort of dingy, dark corner of a rumor about some sort of global conspiracy. Here it is, in black and white. And anyone who is not paying attention to this and not taking it seriously is ultimately not on the field of battle in terms of the ultimate battle for the future of the human species. I cannot stress enough how important this is. So in an attempt to just throw out some of the ideas and concepts of the ways in which this is going to utterly transform everything about our lives in the coming years, if these people get their way, I'll turn to a number of sources. First, let's look at a surprisingly interesting and perhaps tipping the hand more than intended article from the Financial Times. Yes, the Financial Times, by Yuval Noah Harari. Called The World After Coronavirus, which goes into a great degree of detail the incredible invasions of privacy that are on the table as a result of this hysteria. And just reading from one part talking about the types of surveillance that are going to be possible in the future, Harari writes, quote, "One of the problems we face in working out where we stand on surveillance is that none of us know exactly how we are being surveilled and what the coming years might bring. Surveillance technology is developing at breakneck speed, and what seemed science fiction 10 years ago is today old news. As a thought experiment, consider a hypothetical government that demands that every citizen wears a biometric bracelet that monitors body temperature and heart rate 24 hours a day. The resulting data is hoarded and analyzed by government algorithms. The algorithms will know that you are sick even before you know it. And they will also know where you have been and who you have met. The chains of infection could be drastically shortened and even cut altogether. Such a system could arguably stop the epidemic in its tracks within days. Sounds wonderful, right? The downside is, of course, that this would give legitimacy to a terrifying new surveillance system. If you know, for example, that I clicked on a Fox News link rather than a CNN link, that can teach you something about my political views and perhaps even my personality. But if you can monitor what happens to my body temperature, blood pressure, and heart rate as I watch the video clip, you can learn what makes me laugh, what makes me cry, and what makes me really, really angry. It is crucial to remember that anger, joy, boredom, and love are biological phenomena, just like fever and a cough. The same technology that identifies coughs could also identify laughs. If corporations and governments start harvesting our biometric data en masse, they can get to know us far better than we know ourselves, and they can then not just predict our feelings, but also manipulate our feelings and sell us anything they want, be it a product or a politician. Biometric monitoring would make Cambridge Analytica's data hacking tactics look like something from the Stone Age. Imagine North Korea in 2030, when every citizen has to wear a biometric bracelet 24 hours a day. If you listen to a speech by the great leader, and the bracelet picks up the telltale signs of anger, you are done for." End quote. And that's just a small section of that rather extensive article talking about the various ways that this technology could utterly transform our lives. But don't worry, I mean, that's North Korea kind of stuff. That wouldn't happen over here, right? Dot, dot, dot. And in fact, like so much of this propaganda, it plays out like a threat. Because, of course, he's warning about these things. Oh, this could happen. Imagine a state that gets its hands on this type of surveillance technology and the ways that this could be abused. But we could use this technology for ourselves, and we could harness the power of it to self-analyze and monitor. And as long as we all cooperate and all voluntarily do what is expected of us in terms of social distancing and quarantining and masking and whatever else, then maybe we can avoid that kind of dystopian future being forced upon us by the powers that shouldn't be. It plays out exactly like a threat. Of course, they're saying, hey guys, either you comply with us or we will be forced to make your existence a living nightmare of total Orwellian surveillance and control over every aspect, not just of what you do, but what you think, how you breathe, how your heart rate, everything coming under the watchful gaze of Big Brother and his all-seeing eye. That is the future that is on the table that they are threatening us with. And don't worry, when the next bioterror false flag is sprung on us and whatever starts spreading through the population, then they'll have, the narrative will already be there, everything will already be set, and they'll say, look, see, you guys didn't practice enough social distancing, so now we're going to have to come in and forcibly do this to you. That is the trap that's being sprung for us. And so once again, my mind boggles at attempting to in any way encapsulate every aspect of what is being put on the table here. But let's just break it down into some of the broad categories and some of the things that are happening right now and that are due to happen in the near future. For example, let's look at a category like education. Now, when you take everything and make it digital, then you are automatically making it immediately censorable from a distance, and not even necessarily by a human, just an algorithm can detect wrong thought or wrong speech here or there and shut it down at the source. And we are, of course, living through that as I record this. Another GooTube purge is taking place. Oh, if only someone had warned us that YouTube might censor people. Oh, I never thought of that. It is happening right now. And as an example that I cited in my interview on The Great Reset with Pete Quinones last week, I talked about the case of a speaker at San Francisco State University invited by one of the university's groups to talk at a virtual lecture that was taking place. But there was protest. Oh, a Palestinian. Uh-oh. So the Israeli lobby rallied and there were Fox News articles written in protest. And it was canceled. It was deplatformed, not even by the university, but by Zoom, by Facebook, by YouTube. The platforms themselves shut down the ability for an invited speaker to speak at a university event. So that's one aspect of this, and it was encapsulated in an insightful comment that was left on the Odyssey video version of that Great Reset talk that I had with Pete Quinones. Uncle Franco left the comment, at the very least, the Fourth Industrial Revolution will place the robber barons in between every human interaction. This gives the robber barons a fee for every interaction and the power to approve or deny every human interaction. It is every human's duty to prevent this infrastructure to gain government monopoly status and universal public acceptance. Undermine everyone who is part of the robber baron class. If they sell eggs, smash them or make them unable to sell them. Keep them up at night. Let your dog urinate on their lawn and so on and so on. Never surrender. Once you begin to fight back, your life will have meaning. Try a small gesture today and see how great it feels or not. The choice is yours.
A stronger lockdown scenario is about to play out in Canada. Internment camps, military checkpoints, and COVID-21 by the second quarter of 2021. Have a listen to this session in the Canadian Parliament.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Premier. In my supplemental question yesterday, I asked this government if the people of Ontario should prepare for internment camps. In September, the federal government posted a call for expressions of interest for contractors to supply, provide, and manage quarantine isolation camps throughout every province and every territory in Canada. These quarantine isolation camps, however, are not limited to people with COVID, but provide a wide latitude for many people to be detained. Surely this government is aware of the intentions to build these isolation camps from coast to coast. And my question to the Premier is, how many of these camps will be built? And how many people does this government expect to detain?
Question. Government House Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It is very true that when people leave the country and when they come back in, that the province is suggesting, and the federal government, in cooperation with the federal government, we are suggesting that people isolate themselves. That has been a practice that has been very successful, not only here in the province of Ontario, but across Canada, and we will, of course, be redoubling our efforts to make sure that the people of the province of Ontario remain safe, Mr. Speaker. So if the member is referring to the fact that that one of the public health policies is that when you return from a jurisdiction outside of the province of Ontario or from another country, that you isolate yourself for 2 weeks. I would suggest that has been a good policy that has been working. In fact, this House has been doing the same thing since we came back. We are working in cohorts to make sure that the Legislative Assembly can continue to operate. That's why we have two separate cohorts, Mr. Speaker.
Response.
And with the cooperation of the official opposition, that is why all members of the Independents have been excluded from that cohort, because we want them to be able to participate in debate. So we will continue to do everything in our power to make sure that this House continues, but that the people of the province of Ontario and Canada are kept safe.
Supplementary question.
Again, back to the Premier. Here's the RFP, and in the RFP, it uses clear language to express that these camps can be used for a broad spectrum of people, not limited to travelers. Indeed, it doesn't even mention international travelers. It's just a broad latitude of people. And I'll send over the copy of the RFP after. So your government must be in negotiations and aware of these plans to potentially detain and isolate citizens and residents of our country and our province. So, Speaker, to the Premier, where will these camps be built? How many people will be detained? And for what reasons?
Question.
For what reasons can people be kept in these isolation camps? And I'd like to have the Premier assure the people of Ontario.
Member, take a seat. The next question.
People are standing up and resisting. Attorneys Tom Rentz, David Helm, and Reiner Fulmich are standing up and challenging the lockdowns legally in court. Organizations of doctors are standing up and asking for you to support them and resist in any way you can. Where are the other companies coming out with accurate testing? There is news of a company called AstraTech that has developed the testing systems, but how long will it take for that to roll out? Can humans resist and reconnect to their true social nature and reignite visions of their many possible futures? Or will human dreams be extinguished by artificial intelligence? That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.